This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 64.
Welcome to the Marathon Training Academy podcast. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, we profile the 2012 Olympic medalist in the men's and women's marathon. Who are these great runners and what can we learn from them? And in the quick tip segment, Angie talks about kinesio tape. And if you like our help in your marathon training, become a member of the Academy by visiting our website, marathontrainingacademy.com. So we're already deep into the month of August. Summer's almost over. Angie, and I can't believe it. Kids are back to school. We just got back from Pennsylvania, and it was nice to see our family and run in the hills a little bit. Didn't you think so?
Yes, it was.
And while we're in Pennsylvania, we got to meet up with a member of the Academy, Terry, and her husband, who came up from State College. So I really appreciate them driving a little ways to come up there and hang out with us for the afternoon. And we went on a little hike and had a good time.
Yes, we did. It was really fun to put a face and a name and a personality to someone I've been corresponding with via email. So good luck, Terry, in the upcoming Wineglass Marathon in Corning, New York.
And I think we mentioned already, but we're signed up for the Route 66 Marathon in Tulsa, Oklahoma. That is on November the 18th, and we're excited about that. I think there's still time to sign up if you haven't found a good marathon to do in the fall yet. We're looking for some other races to run too, but we haven't narrowed any others down.
There's an ongoing debate about which one to do in October.
We'll get it figured out.
Yes, we will. Another exciting thing was that this week we went over 5,000 likes on Facebook. So I'd kind of been watching the number creep up there, and it was kind of exciting for me to see that and to think about all the amazing people that it represents out in our audience. I mean, I clearly remember when we had 50 likes on Facebook, and I think most of them were family and friends probably. And, you know, so it's amazing to get to this milestone and think of all the great things that are ahead.
Yeah, we're glad we can be here for all of you. And we know you're going to enjoy this episode. We're going to talk about the medalist in the London Marathon. Who are these athletes? We have practiced pronouncing their names.
Although I will apologize in advance, I'm sure I'll still butcher at least one. So please forgive me if you're a native speaker of their particular language.
Yeah, we're going to do our best. We are in Missouri here, so we can barely speak English well enough.
Speak for yourself.
Okay. All right, Angie, so you have any good news from people in our community?
Always. I've got a couple of emails here to read from people out in the community. The first one says, "Hi, Angie and Trevor. My husband has been training for a half marathon for a month now, and I didn't understand why he was so excited about it. I've been listening to your podcast with him, and it's really been growing on me and making me want to run. I decided to start training for a half marathon, too. I've been into fitness for years, but I've never ran more than 5 miles, so this will be a challenge for me. Since I started running this time around, it feels so different training for a race rather than just running for exercise. I'm actually getting really excited and enjoying getting up at 4:30 a.m. to run. We live in Phoenix, so getting up early is a must. Thanks for the podcast. It's very inspiring. Jessica."
Well, that's awesome. Getting into running and taking on the half marathon. I know how that feels.
That's right. The second email says, "Hi, Angie and Trevor. Yay, my first marathon is complete, and I'm here to thank you both. During my training, I listened to your podcast and found it full of good information and a great source of encouragement. I began training for the Gold Coast Marathon in Australia 3 months out from race day, and not only did it involve plenty of running, but also plenty of podcasts. Even on race day, I put on the Success Stories podcast and listened, being inspired to finish and not to focus on my time so much. I completed the race in 5 hours and 2 minutes and could not believe the overwhelming emotions of running that first marathon. I think I spent at least 10K stifling my tears and emotions only so that I could bawl my eyes out at the end, and it felt great. Let that be a warning to podcast listeners. Being a bit over on my time, I'd like to do it again next year and see the run played out as it was in my mind. Nonetheless, I am a finisher and proud of it. Even my kids, age 7, 9, and 12, are talking about running a marathon when they grow up. That, too, was unexpected. So please keep podcasting. I'm going to need you next year. And sincerely, thank you." That comes from Karen.
Well, congratulations, Karen, on completing your first marathon, and we're glad that we were here to inspire and help you.
That's right.
We'd just like to give a shout out to our friend Eric Strand, who completed successfully the Leadville 100 Trail Ultra Marathon, and it took him 29 hours and 14 minutes.
It's pretty amazing, and it was exciting to follow his progress online and see him get to each checkpoint.
So he had to run like all day and all night. Can you imagine the psychological boost that gives you to know you ran a 100-mile trail marathon that very few have, very few people?
Yes, he just entered an elite group of athletes.
We're not even worthy to whisper his name.
I know. He'll stop returning our calls now.
So right on, Eric, and congratulations to all of you out there who are taking action and reaching new milestones in your running. Well on my way, well on my way, well on my way. All right, so we're going to recap the winners of the men's and women's marathon in the 2012 London Olympics. Did you get a chance to watch it, Angie?
I didn't get to watch it live, no.
Okay.
So I've just seen a few clips, but it, you know, it's definitely very exciting. I mean, I think all the track and field events are pretty exciting. And unfortunately, the marathon doesn't get as high of coverage as some of the other Olympic events. But all of us long-distance running junkies out there, you know, pay special attention to the marathons, and it's really neat to just dig into the background of the winners and, you know, even those from our country that participated. So I'm excited about this episode.
All right, so we're going to talk about the women's marathon first.
Yes, it took place on August 5th, and it featured the fastest group of women ever assembled. The temperature that day, I think, was in the 60s with driving rains and slick cobblestones. And the course was a 2.2-mile stretch and then three times around an 8-mile loop. So it had a total of 90 turns in the race, which is, you know, pretty difficult. The competitors raced a pretty steady first half and then had a strong second half. There's actually a fierce four-way battle over the final miles that finally pushed Ethiopia's Tiki Galena to gold and an Olympic record victory in 2 hours, 23 minutes, and 7 seconds, which was only 5 seconds ahead of Kenya's Priska Jeptu. Now, the 5-second difference was the smallest between first and second place in the women's Olympic marathon history. So all in all, an Olympic record was set, there were 7 national records that were broken, and 16 women set personal best finishes. So it was a pretty big day for the women.
I did watch the women's marathon. I got to watch the replay of it on my computer. And just to see the look of determination on their faces, you know.
Well, you know how much determination it takes to run a marathon slowly, but to push yourself that hard and that quickly against, you know, the fastest women in the world, it's amazing.
Yeah, I'm thinking particularly about the very last mile or, you know, the home stretch. And you could just see the pain, but yet the look of determination, and unlike what we do after we've crossed the finish line, we usually walk it off. I think Tiki Galena just kind of sat down, and maybe she prayed. I'm not sure what she did, but that's what you say not to do.
Well, when you're an elite, you can do whatever you want, I think.
That's right. You want to lay down right there at the finish line, you can. You can do that.
That's right.
Don't try to do that at the Rock and Roll Marathon, though, if you sign up.
You get trampled. Now, in our last podcast, we talked briefly about the American women running the marathon. And unfortunately, Desiree DeVia had a disappointing day and had to drop out around mile 2 with a hip flexor injury. Shalane Flanagan came in 10th, and she said this about the race, quote, "This was only my third marathon. I learned something new every time. I thought the preparation we did would hold up a little better today. We did a little bit faster stuff than normal. We knew who we'd be running against, the best. This course trashes your legs, all the stop and go. There were times when I had to talk myself through rough spots. The body starts to feel the way it does when you put your hand on a hot stove. You want to pull it off, but you can't do that in the marathon. I risked a little to be in contention today. Now I'm just looking forward to Boston next April."
Yeah, you know, I think she needs Marathon Training Academy.
Yes. I'm sure she'll be signing up for the academy soon.
It'll go a lot better next time for her.
American Kara Goucher, which is Shalane Flanagan's teammate, took 11th place. So I thought, you know, it was pretty good showing for the American women to get in the top 11. That was definitely nothing to sneeze at.
It was such
great competition.
Yeah, definitely. I thought they had a good race. They hung with the pack, you know, for most of the way. And they finished 10th and 11th out of how many? like over 100, right? That's,
he was nearly 100, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I was amazed at how soon that the pack kind of split up, you know, when you had 10 or 15 women way ahead of all the others.
Yeah, it's interesting to see who tries to stick with the lead pack and then who stays in the chase pack. And, you know, when they decided to try to make their moves to surge ahead. And I think all of that plays into probably how the race goes and what kind of shape you're in as well. If you can hang with the front runners, you don't want to just, you know, surge ahead and then have to drop back and finish really slowly. So there's a lot of strategy that goes into it.
I think the first place finisher was an hour ahead of the very last finisher.
Probably the last place finisher was somebody who was nursing an injury but decided just to finish anyway.
Yeah, that person still finished, you know, in like 3 hours and some change, which was way faster than I can, so I'm not talking.
I'm not saying anything either.
I'm just saying it was quite a disparity, you know, in time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, even among the fastest women in the world, just coming down to the race day, there's going to be people who are feeling strong and able to have the best race of their life, and there's going to be people who have the worst race of their life, you know, so just happens to all of us, I guess, one time or the other. As we talked about on the podcast last time, Great Britain's Paula Radcliffe, who holds the fastest women's marathon time ever, was out a week before the race with a foot injury, so she didn't get to participate.
That's a bummer. Now she has to wait 4 more years.
And honestly, she probably won't.
Yeah, you can't run marathons in Olympic level forever, you know.
There are some women who, you know, stay strong even up into their 40s, but she's already 38. So the Rio Olympics in 2016, she'll be 42. Hmm. And with the injury she's been battling, you know, there's probably not much of a chance that she'll be there. But, you know, you never know. Miracles can happen.
I wonder if that weighs kind of heavy on her.
I'm sure it does. I'm sure it's a huge disappointment to have the Olympics, you know, in your home country.
Right.
And
you're the fastest woman.
You're the fastest woman in the world and not be able to go out there and have your day in the Olympics.
Yeah, it's too bad. Well, who is this Tiki Galana?
She is from Ethiopia. She's 24 years old. She stands 5'5" and she weighs 106 pounds. Galana comes from the vicinity of Bokoji, and it was in the town of Addis Ababa where she joined others watching the 2000 Olympics. She watched the Ethiopians Duratu Tulu and Gidewami win gold and silver medals there, and she knew that running was what she wanted to do. She now spends her days in close proximity to one of her other running idols, as Wami's husband is her coach. Galana ran a national record of 2 hours, 18 minutes, 58 seconds, the second fastest time of the year, and 8th fastest marathon finish ever for a woman when she won the Rotterdam Marathon in April, and she also won Amsterdam last October. Coming into London, she said she felt ready for the challenges that she would encounter in the Olympic marathon, including the Kenyan opposition and the course itself. However, she wasn't prepared for a fall that she took at a water station during the race, and that left her right forearm skinned up and bloodied. She says about her fall, quote, "I went to collect water, and I don't know who I came in contact with, but I fell. I fell very hard." But I really think that she's made us some pretty tough stuff, as we saw in the last mile of the race where she really pushed hard. She also said, "We Ethiopians think marathon is our national sport. Winning a gold in the marathon is very special for me. Marathon is my life." End of quote.
Yeah, I remember watching that fall. They zoomed in on that. They were kind of from an aerial view, so all the runners were going by the water station. And each country had its flag and its own separate little water station where, you know, the athletes could pick up their bottle. But one of the announcers were saying it's kind of strange how all the water stations were so close together, they should have spread them out more and, you know, cut down on the congestion.
It did really cause a backlog. And, you know, as those of us who've run normal marathons know, water stations can be dangerous places as it is if you're not paying attention. You know, people will stop right in front of you or slow down or swerve in your path. And so, yeah, I imagine it was pretty shocking and surprising to take a fall. But it didn't seem to hinder her performance any.
No.
Maybe it even made her more determined. I don't know.
So her finishing time was 2 hours, 23 minutes, and 7 seconds.
That's right. The silver medal went to Priska Jeptu of Kenya, who finished in 2 hours, 23 minutes, and 12 seconds. She is 28 years old, 5'5", and 108 pounds. She began competing at top-level competitions in 2008, and she's won marathons in Paris and Turin with a best time of 2 hours, 20 minutes, and 14 seconds for the distance. She was the marathon silver medalist at the World Championships in 2011. A recent article I read said that Jeptu is blaming the late selection of the women's marathon team for their predicament in the recent Olympic Games. I guess Kenya was hoping for more than a second place on the podium as far as their women's marathoners went. Jeptu said that an earlier selection would have given the athletes adequate recovery time before the Olympic Games. She says, quote, "We selected the team in April, and with the London Games in August, there was no adequate time to recover from the spring marathons," end of quote. Jeptu said she fought hard to catch up with the Ethiopian Tiki Galena, but it proved too hard, especially after Galena made her break to the finish. Jeptu now has her sights set on winning the world championship gold. She said, quote, "I hope it'll be third time lucky next year in Moscow." She also added that she'll take a break for the remainder of the year before resuming training for the London Marathon next April in the World Championships. So I really think that the Kenyans had their sights set on maybe all the medals for the women. And, you know, it was disappointing to them that the best they could do was silver, and then two of their other front runners, you know, didn't medal at all.
What do they usually clean up on all the medals?
I think they usually perform better than they did this year. Mm-hmm. You know, it was fairly surprising. I mean, Ethiopia always performs really well, too, but I think it was a little bit of a surprise for them.
All right, so now let's talk about the bronze medalist, Tetyana Petrova Arkhipova, and that's a fun name to say.
She's from Russia. She finished in 2 hours, 23 minutes, and 29 seconds, and she bettered her PR by a minute and a half.
She bettered my PR, too.
Mine, too. We have something in common. She's 29 years old, and she made her marathon debut in 2004, coming in fifth in the Honolulu Marathon. At the Chicago Marathon in 2005, she improved her PR to 2:31.03. But in 2005, she switched back to the steeplechase event and placed fourth in that event at the 2008 Beijing Olympics. Her focus then switched back to marathon running in 2009, and she ran a personal best of 2:25.53 for fourth place at the Dubai Marathon, and then she ended up winning the Los Angeles Marathon in May of this year. In the 2012 Olympic Marathon, Tatiana was nowhere near a favorite, and she was actually overshadowed by a large number of Africans, Americans, and Europeans. She ran the first half conservatively, and then she caught up to the leaders at about the 30K mark. She stayed with them until the final kilometer, and then she fell back into bronze medal position. She says, "I am very happy and tearful because I didn't expect to get third. My tactics were to be part of the main group and to be close to the leaders. I was frightened until the end because the African runners were very strong. I tried to stay with them, and I did. I am very proud."
You know, I've heard that the people that get bronze medal are usually more happy than the people that get silver.
Yes, I'm sure they were just happy to podium at all. Mm-hmm. And silver, you're always thinking, oh, what could I have done to get gold?
Yeah. But what do you think about what Tetyana was talking about, how she ran conservatively in the beginning and then caught up about 30K mark? What do you think we can learn from that going to a race?
Well, I think it's important to pace yourself during a marathon and to run the pace that you're capable of. You know, too many times, whether it's the excitement of the race or trying to keep up with someone in front of you, you start out too fast, and then pretty soon you just blow up, you know, and then you drop back, maybe start walking. You know, your whole race is ruined if you start out too fast. And so she started out conservatively, was a pace that she knew she could hold, and then she still had, you know, energy at the halfway point. So she probably thought, you know, I can catch these front runners, I'm going to stay with them, finish strong, do my very best, and I think it was a good strategy for her.
And if you're going for a PR, so you can try to beat your previous time, you pace yourself pretty well in the beginning, but then at what mile should you just lay it on, you know, and just empty out everything in the tank and just go for it?
I like to encourage people to stay pretty conservative till about mile 20. Mm-hmm. And then if you still have gas in the tank after that, just, you know, from mile 20 to 23, push the gas pedal a little bit farther. After mile 23, you know, I'd say just pour it on, give it everything you've got, and cross that finish line, and don't hold anything back.
All right, sounds good. Give that a try at your next marathon. Well, let's talk about the men's event now, men's marathon. I feel like a radio announcer. Now to the men.
I don't think I could pronounce all those names like they do with such ease.
Yeah, they must really practice.
And I think it helps to have a British accent. You know, they just sound more authoritative.
Yeah, more sure of what they're saying.
105 men were in the 30th Olympic Marathon on August 12th, and among them were actually six runners who had run sub 2-hour and 5-minute marathons. So, you know, it's a very fast group of men. The Kenyan team had stated earlier they would try to honor the memory of the late Sammy Wangiru and his victory and record at the 2008 Beijing Olympics. Wangiru, who had died in 2011 at age 24, had earned the first gold medal at the marathon for Kenya, which is a country that's famous for its long-distance running.
How did he die?
Well, it was some kind of domestic dispute. He fell from a balcony and died. So, you know, people aren't sure if he was intoxicated or, you know, someone pushed him. It was all pretty muddied. He had had a pretty rough personal life in the last few years, kind of living in the fast lane and everything. So it was very sad because he had a lot of talent. In the marathon, the anything can happen factor took over when the front runner from Kenya, Kipsang, missed the fluid station, turned around and ran back 20 feet to retrieve his bottle, and then lost several seconds, which affected his momentum. The Olympic gold medal went to surprise winner Stephen Kiprotich with a time of 2 hours, 8 minutes, and 1 second. Two Kenyans followed with Kurui in 2 hours, 8 minutes, 27 seconds, and Kipsang in 2 hours, 9 minutes, and 37 seconds, which was his slowest marathon finish ever. American Meb Keflezighi took 4th place in 2 hours, 11 minutes, 6 seconds in a hard-fought battle. Meb said, quote, "I was struggling. Even the second chase group got ahead of me. I kept praying for God to get me connected to the second group, and after that to see if I could be in the top 10 or 15. I kept working, changing strategies, focuses, and goals." Coach Vigil always said that 98% of distance running success comes from what you've got between your ears. I had to rely on that today. I was healthy, but I wasn't as fit as I could have been. I covered that up with my mental approach today. The Olympic marathon is different. It's a summer race. You have to prepare. You have to do your homework. You have to have the right plan of attack. End of quote. The 37-year-old says it'll be his last Olympics. He'd like to do a fall marathon and maybe a couple major marathons in 2013. Then it may come time for him to retire.
Wow. You know, sometimes you don't think about how much mental work these athletes are doing as well.
Definitely. I mean, the mental game is so important no matter what kind of shape you're in. You know, we always think, oh, they're in such awesome shape. They've trained for this for so long. You know, be a piece of cake. Mentally, they should have confidence and, you know they can do it. But no, they still have the same battles that we do.
Yeah, I was even noticing like small things when I was watching the women's marathon, how they would just hug the corners, you know, on turns and, you know, merge across the road when they saw, you know, turn going the other way, just like a race car driver.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to give away any steps that you don't have to give away. And when, who was it, the second place winner?
The third place.
Yeah,
the third. Saying.
Yeah, when he had to run back to get his water bottle, that shit, that man, that was awful. But then you have to make this calculation. What if I don't go back and get it?
Right, exactly. Could it affect me more? And I think, you know, not only the lost time, it's also like it messes with your psyche, you know, mentally. You start beating yourself up for, you know, dropping it. I know once during the start of the marathon, I dropped my fuel bottle.
That was in Winthrop, right?
Yeah. Fortunately, it wasn't a big race, so I had to kind of like weave back through the crowd to get it. It just like messed with me like the first couple of miles. I was like, what a doofus. <You know? laughs> So I'm sure that
people are like, wrong way, lady.
Yeah, thanks for almost tripping us. So yeah, all those things, little things count, you know, especially at this high level of competition.
There were two ladies in the women's marathon who shared a bottle because one of them didn't get hers. So her teammate, I forget what country they're from, her teammate reached over and after she was done with hers, gave it over. I think it was
Kenya.
Yeah.
Actually, they would take turns getting the bottle from the station and then share it with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they probably had decided on that strategy early on. You know, often members of the same country, the same team, will try to work together with their strategy and obviously here helping each other out with fluids and stuff.
Yeah. Okay, so Meb Keflezighi got 4th place. What about the other American runners?
Well, both Ryan Hall ended up leaving the race at about 10 miles with a hamstring injury, and Abdi Abdirahman left the race about 2 minutes later. Hall said this, "I've never DNF'd a race before, so this is a first for me. Not finishing a race is not an option unless I think I'm going to do some serious damage to my career. Those last couple of miles I'm weighing in my head. Do I sit out here and could I have run 26 miles and finish in 3 hours or something? But my stride was getting worse and worse. This wasn't something I could work through." Abdi said this of his did not finish. Quote, I felt like I was feeling good during the race. I was in good position and feeling really good. I thought I was going to make a move at mile 13, but something just happened. There was a pop in my knee. I don't know what it is, but it just popped, and we turned, and I tried to run a couple more miles, but I couldn't take it anymore. It was just painful. There was no warning.
How would some of our listeners determine if they should drop out of their marathon and not finish? Like, at what point would the pain be too much for you, and you would know, okay, I don't need to finish?
I think in every marathon, there's a certain amount of pain or discomfort. And so you have to be prepared for some of that, but you also have to listen to your body and know that point where I'm going to do damage to myself and going to affect my chances of running in the coming months. So, you know, it's an individual thing. There are people who push through incredible amounts of pain. If the injury is something that it's affecting your running stride, if you're having sharp or acute pain, then, you know, you really need to stop running, start walking, see if you can walk through it. You know, if it's a cramp, you can probably massage it out or just walk through it and rehydrate and get going again. But if you've walked for a couple of minutes and you try running again, it's just the same intense pain. You know, your body's trying to tell you, I can't do this anymore. And I guess it would be dependent on where you are in the race. If you're, you know, just a couple miles from the finish line, I know personally I would probably try
just
to
walk.
Finish no matter what. Right, just walk or whatever I had to do. But if it's early on in the race and you would have to go 20 more miles with, you know, that horrible pain, it's just not worth it. You know, you kind of have to pick your battles, and that's probably not one you should fight. You know, with that said, we all read examples of people who overcome insurmountable odds and finish ultra marathons with their bones sticking out of their leg, practically.
Well, that's because they're out, way out in the wilderness, and they have to get back.
Right. But, you know, that's a personal decision you have to make for yourself. Another thing is if you can't keep fluids down and you're vomiting a lot, you can do serious damage to yourself if, you know, you're getting dehydrated. If you're having chest pain and you having trouble breathing, that's another reason to drop out of a race or to seek medical attention right away. So it's all about listening to your body. And as you do your long runs during your training, you're going to find out what your body is capable of, what's normal for your body, and what you can push through and what you shouldn't push through. There's not one size fits all answer in this case, but I would say that both of them probably made the best decision for themselves. This was an Olympics where many of the Ethiopian distance runners performed pretty well, especially in the women's side, but actually all three Ethiopians in the men's marathon did not finish on Sunday. So that was pretty shocking for many people. I guess all in all, the men's race was pretty exciting. So after all that fanfare, the Olympic gold medal went to 23-year-old Stephen Kiprotich of Uganda with a winning time of 2 hours, 8 minutes, and 1 second. Kiprotich was formerly a relative unknown, and he stands 5'8" and weighs 120 pounds. He is the first Ugandan medalist in a men's Olympic running event since Munich in 1972. Stephen is the youngest of 7 children of subsistence farmers from near the Uganda-Kenya border. As a child, he missed 3 years of elementary school due to an undiagnosed illness. Then from 2004 to 2006, he quit athletics to concentrate on school. At the age of 17, he moved to Kenya in the Rift Valley. He was assisted by A Running Start, which is a nonprofit foundation based in New York. He then made his marathon debut in 2011 in the Netherlands as a pacer and went on to win the race in 2 hours, 7 minutes, and 20 seconds, setting a Ugandan national record. He later took third place in Tokyo. His coach said, quote, he was not believing in himself, thinking that he could only maybe make 10th in the Olympics. We worked with him for many weeks saying, you can win a medal at London. And at last, he began to believe. But even we thought only a medal, not a win like this. End of quote. Kiprotich said, quote, I never saw John Akibua run, which is the only other Ugandan to take Olympic gold. But there are a lot of memories of him. I have been dreaming, can I be like John Akibua? There is a time for everything, a time to train and a time to relax. I think today I joined the champions, so I am happy. When the race started, I thought the Kenyans would win. I kept in touch, and then I thought, let me move, so I moved. When we came to within 3 miles, then I started to go on strongly. I might have been unknown before, but now I am known, so I am happy. I am now a known athlete. Determination is what matters. I would like to send a message to the Ugandan Athletics Federation and the Minister of Sports. Consider us athletes in Uganda. We need more facilities. The lack of facilities is what pushed me to train in Kenya. End of quote.
Wow. That guy's got vision, too.
Yeah, he's pretty inspiring. I love it when he said, I thought, let me move. So I moved.
I know. I'm going to use that in my next race.
Yeah, I thought that was really neat. And in an article I read, his 60-year-old mother said, we are peasant farmers. We do solely rely on earnings from subsistence farming and handouts from our children to survive. We no longer have energy to run errands. Look at this house. It is not befitting the parents of a national hero. End of quote. The elderly couple owns a solitary cow and gets by with a meager poultry business. Kiprodich is our main caretaker in this family, says his 80-year-old father. Whenever he goes for international events and wins money, he spares some for his upkeep, for his training, and uses the balance to educate some of his brothers and close relatives. End of quote. Kiprodich was welcomed home by cheering fans before being whisked to a breakfast meeting with President Museveni. Museveni presented the gold medalist with a check for around $80,000. He also promised to construct a 3-bedroom house for Kiprodich's impoverished parents, who live in a remote area of eastern Uganda. Kiprodich, who is married with 2 children, works as a warden in Uganda's prisons. He was also handed a promotion from his bosses, a senior official at the Ugandan Prison Services said.
Wow, this really changed people's lives.
I think in the United States and many other European countries, you know, we don't really understand what some of these athletes go through who come from third world countries. How, you know, they probably did a lot of their training barefoot, and wow, what a life-changing event.
Too bad there can only be one winner like that. So many other people are in need in these countries. You just wish that there was a way for more of them to get access to the kind of empowerment that Stephen now has, you know what I'm saying?
Well, I think this win will be good. It'll probably help the further development of athletes in his country. You know, he'll inspire people in leadership positions to provide the funds to do that, as well as the ordinary people, you know, now realize that maybe they can accomplish their athletic dreams.
I'm still thinking about his quote, let me move.
So I moved.
Permission to run faster. Permission granted. Let's talk about now the silver medalist, Abel Kirui.
Yes, he's from Kenya. He finished in 2 hours, 8 minutes, 27 seconds. He is 30 years old, and he started running while in primary school. After high school, a jobless Kirui entered a recruitment race by the administration police. He won the race and subsequently joined the administration police, starting serious training only after then. He then entered the 2006 Berlin Marathon as a pacemaker, but he finished the race in 9th place. He then had back-to-back wins at the World Championships Marathon in 2009 and 2011. He's also won the Vienna Marathon and was runner-up at the 2007 Berlin Marathon. Kirui lives in Kenya. He is married, has a son, and is coached by Renato Canova as of 2011. Abel Kirui said this of the race, quote, actually, when me and Wilson Kipsang were together, I thought we were the only ones who would fight for the gold. I thought I was going to sprint with Kipsang in the final kilometers. Surprisingly, I saw Stephen with us, and it was difficult to make a move. He stayed with us for a long time, and he made a stronger move in the end. We were closing the gap, but couldn't catch him. I am happy for him. I am happy for my 2 consecutive world championship gold medals and with my Olympic silver medal. I am grateful for that. End of quote.
Yeah, you know, when you see him make the move and one guy just starts kind of running ahead of the other guy, you're thinking, why doesn't the other guy just catch up to him?
Right.
From you sitting there and watching it on the screen, I guess you don't really see how fast they're moving.
Well, it seems so effortless when you see those elite runners.
Yeah, that's the thing
about
it.
You think, oh, they could just go a little faster. But if you've ever been in that spot, you know, just pushing to go a little bit faster and, you know, you're going as hard as you can and you're like the slowest pace you've ever been at, you know. It's like, I am doing an all-out effort and I'm slowing down. So, yeah, it's pretty amazing.
I kept thinking to myself, if he could catch up to him, he would. I mean,
exactly.
Who wouldn't, right?
Right. Yeah, that's for sure. Kenya's Wilson Kipsang took the bronze medal with a finish of 2 hours, 9 minutes, and 37 seconds. The 30-year-old stands 6 foot tall and weighs 137 pounds.
That guy is skinny.
They all are. I mean, they're just running machines.
I like running, but I don't think I like it that much to take on that body type.
Wow. It's pretty amazing. Kipsang became a pro athlete in 2007, and he runs the 10K to the marathon. Kipsang had won the 2011 Frankfurt Marathon with a personal best of 2 hours, 3 minutes, and 42 seconds. He holds the 6th fastest time over the half marathon distance. His marathon best time made him the second fastest marathoner of all time, behind world record holder and Kenyan countryman Patrick Makau, who's run 2 hours, 3 minutes, and 38 seconds. So really, he's only 6 seconds off from being the fastest man in the world.
So the fastest marathon time is 2 hours, 3 minutes, and 38 seconds.
Yes. At the London Marathon this year, Kipsang had a 2-hour, 4-minute, 44-second win that made him the second man ever behind Haile Gebrselassie to finish 3 marathons in under 2 hours and 5 minutes. Kipsang said this about his Olympic performance, quote, "It was right for me to push because of the other athletes in the competition. If the pace had been slower, we could have had a problem at the end, so I knew I had to push. We are happy because in each competition, everyone cannot win. To my friend Stephen Kiprotich, congratulations. It was he who won today because in each competition, it's the best one that day who wins. The race was very competitive. When you prepare, you know who the competitors are, but you never know who will win. Today I win, tomorrow you win, that's competition. In athletics, if you really understand how it works, the most you can do is race, and each race is different. I will keep going for the world record. This is my first time at the Olympics, and winning bronze at my first Olympics is good." End of quote.
So he's saying, I will be back.
I'll be back, and I'm going to break the world record and become the fastest man.
Well, it makes you think, you know, maybe you just have a stronger day. And Stephen Kiprotich, maybe it was just his lucky day. Maybe if, like, all these guys were to, you know, run again a week later, that a different one would be in first place.
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, you wish that everyone could be fine-tuned up to their personal best that day. But, you know, just depending on their training, any injuries, their taper, what they've eaten, how much they've rested, their stress level. You know, there's just so many factors, the weather, the course. Just tons of things. Their mental game.
It's really a moving target then, isn't it?
Yeah, it just goes into making each race different. So I thought Kipsang put it really well. You know, one day I win, another day you win. It's all part of competition. You have to expect that going into a race. It was, you know, he had a really philosophical attitude about it, it seemed like. I really enjoyed researching this podcast because I got to learn about runners who I probably wouldn't have taken a look at before. I think each of their personal stories is really amazing, and I really liked reading their reflections from the race, their attitudes. They're just such fierce competitors, and I'm sure that we'll hear more about each of them in the coming years in various marathons.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, how many people listening to this right now have even heard of these men and women before London? Maybe if you follow this stuff really carefully and you're big, you know,
marathon geek.
Yeah, world championships and all that stuff you follow. But not I. I mean, I'm glad that the Olympics brings them all into our living room so we can hear about them and see them and be reminded of how fast they are and how slow we are. No, but I thought it was interesting when you talked about Stephen Kiprotich and his life back in Uganda with his parents and just, you know, some of the, I guess, the context in which we can place him.
Yes. There was a picture online of his parents' house and, you know, just one room, dirt floors, really basic. And, yeah, that's what many of these athletes come from. And yet they, because of their talent and their hard work, they get to appear on the national stage and improve their lives and the lives of others in their community, because most of them take their winnings back home and help support relatives, friends, bring business into their community. So it really benefits a lot of people.
Awesome. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this recap of the 2012 Olympic Marathon events. Now we're going to make time for a quick tip, and Angie's going to talk about kinesio tape. Maybe you watched the Olympic events and you saw like a lot of athletes with tape in various places on their bodies. Pretty much everybody except the swimmers had tape.
Some of the swimmers did.
Oh, did they? So what is up with this kinesio tape?
Yeah, well, it was really interesting to see how prevalent it was this Olympics. And so I thought I would kind of give everyone a background on what it is, what it does, and, you know, if it'd be valuable for the average runner. Kinesiology, or K-tape, is a strong cotton elastic adhesive tape that's used to treat athletic injuries and other physical disorders. It doesn't hinder range of motion, it's waterproof, and it's designed to last for approximately 5 days. It was first introduced in the 1960s, and it was used primarily by orthopedists, chiropractors, and acupuncturists, and other medical practitioners of Japanese medicine. However, it has been used since 1988 by Japanese Olympic and professional athletes. Its popularity really surged in 2008 during the Beijing Olympics, where 50,000 rolls were donated and used by various athletes. Yeah, this year's Summer Games, we saw a variety of colors and patterns, and, you know, it was really interesting to kind of speculate on what they were trying to do with the tape. Obviously, improve their performance. I read somewhere that traffic to Kinesio, the company's website, has increased 1,000% since the Olympic Games. So, obviously, we're not the only ones interested in it. The taping technique was designed by Japanese chiropractor and acupuncturist Kenzo Case in 1979. He believed that standard taping methods were too restrictive and may even prolong injuries because they block the flow of inflammatory fluids beneath the skin. You know, we've all seen the gymnast or different athletes who have tape around their wrists or their ankles, but he was saying, no, there's got to be a better way than that static tape. On the other hand, he believed that a flexible tape that could be applied to injured muscles would stimulate the circulation through its tug on skin and start clearing out the damage through your lymphatic system. His basic concepts are space, flow, and cooling. Dr. Case believes that the source of many joint and muscle pains lies in the thin layer of skin between the epidermis and the dermis. Conventional therapies tend to compress these areas, and he claims that the tape opens the space between the epidermis and dermis, which enables a better flow of blood and lymphatic fluids. This results in a cooling effect, which minimizes swelling and damage. Now, there are currently around 100,000 practitioners who are trained in the application of the tape, and approximately 80 countries use it on their Olympic athletes. The correct placement of the tape really is crucial to receiving any benefits. It's not like the average person can just slap some tape in the general area of their injury and receive any benefits.
So you really have to know how to tape yourself up properly.
Yeah, there's training courses that you have to go through, certifications, to make sure that you have the correct taping technique.
I can't just say, oh, my shin hurts, and just slap it on there.
Right, no. You know, there's certain directions that you want to pull the muscles, the tissues, to provide the correct amount of relief.
Does it work?
That's what everyone wants to know. It may look cool, but does it work? So far, there haven't been any scientific evidence that K-tape produces what they call clinically significant benefits. In a total of 7 studies done so far, there wasn't any long-term benefits found. But researchers speculate that it may help with short-term range of motion and muscle stabilization. Some benefits may also come from the placebo effect, which is basically mind over matter. Your mind is a powerful force. If you believe that something is going to help you, then it probably will. Many adjunct therapies like Kinesio tape don't get large amounts of research because they don't get the funding that products from major drug companies put out.
The placebo effect is a fascinating study, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And it's like sometimes it could even work in reverse. Something that really isn't wrong, but your mind tells you it is a problem, then it hurts.
Yeah, it's like the more you tend to focus on a pain, a discomfort, a problem, sometimes the more it gets agitated in your mind.
I'm just thinking the other day, our 5-year-old son, Gavin, had some scratches on his back from a dog. And they weren't really bad, but I wanted to put some hydrogen peroxide. And kids are scared to death of hydrogen peroxide. It comes in this brown bottle. You know, it looks like it's
ominous.
Iodine. You know, it's going to burn. It really doesn't sting. It just kind of, you know, fizzes on your skin.
Mm-hmm.
But he was scared, and I was kind of trying to talk him into being brave. And I just said, here, just reach out your hand. And I tried pouring a little bit on his arm to say, look, it's just cold. It doesn't sting or anything. But when he felt the cold sensation, his mind equated it with like a burning or a stinging. I'm like, it's just cold. It's not burning you. So then he wasn't looking, and I filled up the cap with water. And I said, let me see your other arm. And I poured water on it. And that burned as well.
Shocking.
His mind would not allow him to think of hydrogen peroxide in any other way other than painful.
Well, it's like the placebo effect a Band-Aid has for a kid.
Yeah.
You know, you can have the smallest little owie and slap a Band-Aid on it, and suddenly it makes it better. You know, the Band-Aid is doing nothing to improve the wound, but, you
gives
know,
you peace of mind
it gives you
somehow.
Peace of mind. And so, you know, that is definitely a part of many therapies. The opposite can also be true. If you don't believe that something is going to happen, sometimes your body doesn't realize the effects of it as well. So, yeah, your mind is a very powerful thing.
So kinesio tape, I guess the verdict is still out scientifically as far as research and studies go on it.
Exactly. But, you know, I mean, athletes will do anything to get an edge to be able to perform better.
There's probably lots of anecdotal evidence for it.
Yes, there is. And I was reading many testimonials online. One lady who had been hit by a car while riding her bike and had the tape applied to the area of her injury. And when they took the tape off 5 days later, there was actually healed skin beneath where the tape was. Mm-hmm. And then there was like bruise, healed skin. So, you know, she really felt that enough of the lifting helped the blood flow return there and heal the area faster. So there's lots of those testimonials. And, you know, like I said, it certainly doesn't hurt. But just having this tape on shouldn't keep you
injury-free.
Yeah, it won't keep you injury-free. And if you are really injured, you're going to have to take other precautions besides using the tape. You know, if you do decide to use it, remember it's not a cure and that it should be applied by a trained therapist as part of your overall rehab. I mean, personally, I only see the kinesio craze getting bigger, and I expect that you'll probably be seeing this kind of tape on an athlete near you.
We'll have to get some and try it out.
Yeah, I'll just tape it across our foreheads. Like, more blood flow to the brain during our podcast.
Yeah. I can use all blood flow I can get.
Can't we all?
And if you'd like more information on running and marathon training, visit us at our website, marathontrainingacademy.com. And when you're there, you can download a free audio gift called The 7 Pillars of Successful Marathon Training. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. We want you to know you do have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life. Well on my way, well on my way.